She could have strangled him. She seriously thought about trying, except he'd take her down so easily it would be humiliating. Her stress level was through the roof. Her common sense was trying to talk her temper down from the ledge. And she was so knocked off balance that she was dangerously close to crying. She might have cried a time or two when she was home alone, but she'd never cried in front of the guys, and didn't intend to start now, especially not with Levi. "No point in it," she muttered after a moment of struggle with her stubbornness. "I don't have a first aid kit with me."
"Maybe you're not prepared," he shot back. "But I am."
He pulled a small yellow kit from his left thigh pocket. She had one just like it, in her car. She didn't carry anything she didn't think she'd need, and she hadn't thought to get it from her car before she started out. Of course she hadn't planned on stepping in a water-filled drainage ditch either, and it was just like Levi to point out her error. But her feet were hurting like blue blazes, and some bandages would keep the damage from getting worse. Scowling, she sat down on the rock and began unlacing her boots. She peeled off her wet socks and surveyed the blisters on both heels, and across the tops of her toes on both feet. Crap. This was going to be a pain for a couple of days. She held out her hand for the first aid kit, but instead Levi crouched in front of her and lifted her right foot onto his knee. Her mouth dropped open, and a flurry of words crowded into her throat, fighting to come out.
What? Hey, I can do that.
That wasn't all her words, but they were the coherent ones. She tried to pull her foot back, but he closed his long fingers around her ankle and firmly held it in place. He flicked a glance up at her.
I've got it.
Abruptly, her heart was pounding like a sledgehammer. She stared at his big hand, feeling the heat of it burn through her skin. He was so big and muscled that he made her feel overwhelmed, as if he had her flat on her back.
Whoa.
She shut that thought down in a hurry, but she was so unnerved that her whole body jerked. Again, the cutting glance. His eyes were so dark she couldn't tell the difference between his irises and pupils.
"Be still," he said.
And there was something in his voice, some subtle inflection, that she couldn't decipher, but nevertheless went all the way to the bone and froze her in place. Levi looked back down at the slender foot he held and concentrated on keeping all reaction out of his face. It was just a foot, for fuck's sake. A girly foot, with bright pink polish on the toenails, and a glittery stripe painted diagonally across each nail. But still, just a foot. The hard truth remained, literally, that he'd been less turned on by looking at a completely naked woman than he was by holding Babe's bare foot. He was touching her skin. Not the skin he preferred to be touching, but still, her skin. And it was skin that needed some first aid. The blisters on her heels had broken open and could easily get infected.
"How did your feet get wet?"
he asked as he opened the kit and took out a squeeze pack of antibiotic salve.
"Drainage ditch? I didn't see it until I was in it."
He gave a brief nod. Shit happened to everyone. He'd gotten his feet wet a time or 20, about half the time on purpose. You had to plan for it, because dry feet were essential. All of them were former military, except for her. The importance of keeping their feet dry had been drilled into them. But he'd overlooked getting her in the same frame of mind. These blisters were his fault.
"I should have told you to always pack extra pairs of socks," he said,
trying to ease the curtness of his tone. He fought a constant battle when he was around her, and only by erring on the side of asshole could he keep things completely hands-off. Now, in spite of himself, he was touching her, just like when she'd started to fall off the rope, and before he knew it, he'd grabbed her to keep her from getting hurt. Keeping his distance was getting tougher by the day. He didn't have a noble bone in his body. His dick was pointing at her like a bird dog toward a nice fat quail, and telling his dick no didn't come naturally to him. But she looked as if she'd jump like a scalded cat if he barked at her, or moved too fast, so he had to tone it down. Getting her feet taken care of was more important than keeping his distance.
"My fault," he said calmly. I didn't think about it. But in the future, always keep 2 or 3 pairs of socks with you if we're in the field, as well as a first aid kit, he added pointedly, squeezing the salve onto the broken blister on her right foot.
I wondered when you get around to that, she grumbled. Deftly, he plastered a bandage over her heel, then took care of the blisters on top of her toes, using one bandage to cover 2 toes, taping them together. Then another bandage on the other 2 small toes on that foot. Only her big toe had escaped blistering. On her left foot, all 5 toes were blistered. He shook his head.
If you're in a jungle and don't take care of your feet, you'll end up with jungle rot, and that's a bad deal.
As he bandaged that foot, he told her about the time he'd overlooked taking care of his feet in humid conditions, how he'd spent 6 days in sick bay, completely pissed off because his team deployed without him. All the while he talked, in a separate part of his brain, he was thinking what it would be like to crawl up between her legs and put her flat on the big rock. He already had her foot in his hand. All he had to do was move it to the side, stand, and he was there. With his hands on her foot and ankle, he could feel the fine tremors that were quaking her, though when he glanced up, she was staring fixedly at her right foot, as if she could will it to heal. Her cheeks were pink, though, and he could see her pulse fluttering at the base of her slender neck. Instinctively, he looked lower, to where twin little points tented her knee, and his mouth started watering like a damn teenager's. He wanted his mouth on those nipples. He wanted his mouth on her, period. Wanted her under his hands, under him. Fuck. He set his jaw and finished slapping bandages on her left foot. Then, to give himself something to do, shifted around to sit beside her and picked up her boots, running his fingers around the inside to feel for any rough edges. Granted, her feet were soft, but she'd rubbed up those blisters faster than he'd thought, even after getting the boots wet. No seams or edges. He frowned and looked at her socks, noticed that they were oddly lumpy. He turned one inside out and pieces of foam fell on the rock.
What the hell?
Foam, she said, picking up the pieces and slipping them into her pocket.
I can see that. Why do you have foam in your socks?
To keep my boots from flopping up and down on my feet and rubbing blisters, she scowled.
Doesn't work when everything's wet.
She could effortlessly punch buttons he hadn't even known he had. Just the idea.
Why the hell don't you just buy boots that fucking fit? He snapped.
At first, they'd all tried to watch the language around her, but as the days had gone by, they'd slipped back into their old habits, and she never paid any attention to their language, or reacted in any way. But sitting so close to her, being turned on by her and knowing she reacted the same way to him, saying fuck wasn't the smartest thing he'd ever done, because it took his thoughts right back to the track he'd been trying to get out of. She whirled toward him, amber and blue eyes spitting fire.
Because they don't make these boots that fucking fit, she snarled back at him.
Then she caught herself and turned facing forward again. At least not that I've found. I need size 7 narrow, with extra narrow heels. These are medium width. They looked like a kid's boots to him, but then he wore a size 13. Again, he felt an unaccustomed surge of guilt, because he should have realized she wouldn't know how to find the proper boots. Though, damn it, she could have asked.
How in hell have you been running?
Because she had. She'd had to work up to their stamina, but now she pretty much ran as much as the rest of the team, unless she was on drone training. Defiantly, she pointed toward the foam. That, and insoles. Low-tech, but it's mostly worked. I stuffed the foam around my heels. I guess now I'll start putting it over my toes, too.
No, now we'll find you some boots that damn well fit. Where did you get these?
The mall. He muttered a few more cuss words.
Because it never occurred to you to ask us where to get boots that fit, huh?
She bristled up at him again. Even though they were sitting side by side, the top of her head barely came to his chin, but that didn't stop her. She had no common sense, he thought. Most men wouldn't cross him, but she didn't hesitate. But maybe she sensed he'd rather break his own hands than hurt her,
No, that wasn't it. Because she fired up at all the other guys, too. And as far as he knew, none of them were tied up in knots over her. A, y'all were gone. B, I needed them fast. Running in sneakers was hell, with sand getting inside them. C, I was too tired at the end of the day to do much more than eat a sandwich and take a shower. I found what I could find as fast as I could find it. She bit the words off, clipping each sound with an audible snap of her teeth. He could chew her out, argue with her, or just cut bait and move on. He decided on the latter, because she'd argue until nightfall.
All right. I'll find you some boots that fit. In the future, damn it, tell me if you have a problem. I'm not a fucking mind reader.
Again, that uncomfortable awareness that his word choice zinged through him. Fuck. Was he going to have to stop saying fuck? Yes, sir. She said so flatly, he knew he'd be lucky if she so much as asked him what time it was. He scrubbed his hand over his face and blew out a frustrated breath.
I don't know how much good it did to put those bandages on your feet when you have to put those wet socks back on. But it's either that, or I carry you to the pickup point. Boom should be there soon.
She muttered something that sounded like, cold day in hell. But it was enough under her breath that he didn't push her on it. Instead, she picked up the socks and began working them on her feet. After packing the pieces of foam inside the socks, around her heels, she gingerly tugged on her boots and stood. She made a face. Not great, but I can walk. It's better than before. Then she grudgingly added, Thanks. Probably just as well he didn't have to carry her. He'd have liked getting his hands on her again way too much. Better that they keep on the way they were, with her throwing up her temper as a way to keep him at a distance, and him locking away his impulses to go all caveman on her. Because, God, he'd like nothing better than to throw her over his shoulder and carry her to bed, or to the floor, or hell against the wall. And that would destroy the team. Even if the change dynamics didn't blow everything to hell, if he made a move on her himself after putting her off limits to the other guys, their resentment would do the damage. He'd done what was safest for her and best for the team, and now he had to live with it. He could hear the far-off rumble of an engine. Both relieved and annoyed, he said,
There's Boom. Let's move.
6. When one was trying to draw a coyote into a trap, one had to be very careful not to set off any alarms. Coyotes, in this case Axel McNamara, were sly and notoriously skittish. Joan Kingsley knew she didn't have a prayer of getting close to him, therefore he had to come to her. That was where the trap came in, because he couldn't know she was involved in any way. If he even suspected, he not only wouldn't venture into the trap, she was likely to lose her own life. Sometimes she wondered why she hadn't already been assassinated, but the knife edge of grief had been so keen, she hadn't really cared. He could easily make her death look like an accident, though really that could be gotten around just by controlling the investigation. The fact that he hadn't made her suspect he anticipated having some use for her in the future, by blackmailing her into cooperating with whatever scheme he'd concocted. There was nothing she put past him. Perhaps she wanted to live now, though she hadn't at first after Dexter was killed. Not even their son had been enough to ease her grief. He was grown and no longer lived at home. Though she loved him very much, he was no longer a part of her everyday life, and she accepted that he never would be again. Nevertheless, part of her wanted to stay alive because of him, because of the possibility of future grandchildren that would be Dexter's grandchildren as much as hers. For that, she would live. And to live, she needed to rid herself of the pestilence that was Axel McNamara. She had a plan. It would involve moving some chess pieces into place, without McNamara realizing who was doing the moving. At this point, Devon was doing all the actual work, because she had to look absolutely uninvolved. Devon likely thought she was still in the dark about his real identity,
And in a sense she was, because she didn't know the name he'd been born with. Nevertheless, since Dexter's murder, from Devon's actions and resources, she had concluded that he was a Russian plant, perhaps even Russian himself. Instead of disappearing and protecting himself, he'd remained in touch with her, subtly feeding ideas of vengeance to her. At least he thought they were subtle. Joan Kingsley was a born politician, and she could spot half-truths and emotional bullshit manipulation from 1,000 yards away. Before Dexter's murder, she'd even appreciated the lack of bullshit in Axel McNamara. That was likely his only good point, but having no subtlety himself meant recognizing it in others was difficult for him. He functioned in D.C. only because those in power saw the benefit of having a rabid Wolverine on their side. But she would bring him down. The end game would be his death. But before then, she would drive him mad by attacking what he cared about the most, his precious go-teams, and using those attacks to maneuver him into position. Graham Berger, South African banker, obscure and easily manipulated, was the current chess piece to be moved into place. The game had begun. "Guys," Gina said the next day when they were taking a break, sitting on the ground and guzzling water. The September sun was hot, the sky a cloudless blue bowl overhead. "What do you tell your family about what you do? My parents are making noises about visiting." She hated being worried about seeing them, but reality was reality, and she had to deal with it. Boom scratched the side of his nose.
"My wife knows, in general. Not the details, but she knows I can get called at any time, and that I can't tell her where I'm going or how long I'll be gone." "Ditto," Snake said. "No way to hide it when you're married. My kids are too young right now to ask questions. They just accept whatever we tell them. I don't know what we'll tell them when they get older. Just play it by ear, I guess."
Behind her, Levi folded his long length to the ground. She knew it was him without looking around. Her skin tingled up her spine and neck, and abruptly she felt as if she was being blasted by heat. She was always acutely aware of his location, though they seldom spoke directly to each other. He didn't want her there, and she knew it. Knew, too, that proving to him she could do the job was way too important. She didn't want it to be, but it was. The best she could do was keep him from seeing how he affected her, even if only for the sake of her pride. Crutch tilted his blonde head back and poured water on his face, then flopped on his back and folded one arm back to pillow his head.
"I told my mom I work for an engineering firm that gets sent all over the world. What's weird about that is he doesn't have an engineering degree, and his mom buys the lame-ass excuse anyway," Jelly said, snickering.
Crutch shrugged, as if to say there was no explaining what people chose to believe.
"My mom would never buy that."
Gina squinted up at the blue sky. "I told her I was learning a new computer program."
"True enough, as far as that goes," Snake said. "But yeah, they'd have to be blind and stupid to buy that's all you're doing. Look at you."
"Look at her?" Gina looked, frowning. Okay, she wasn't dressed like someone who normally worked with computers. She knew computer nerds, given that she had one foot at least halfway into nerdhood herself. She should be wearing jeans and sneakers, and a tee from some obscure rock concert. Instead, she wore lace-up boots that looked as if she'd run 100 miles in them. She had. And brown cargo pants. She was definitely wearing a tee, but it was a sweat-stained, dingy white. "Not wearing this, no. But I can change clothes. I was talking about the hours I spend with you guys, and how dirty I am when I get home, unless it's a swim day. Thank God for swim days. At least then she could shower before she went home." Trapper snorted, leaning back on his elbows.
"The girl doesn't have a mirror,"
he commented to the others. "I do. I brush my teeth and hair every morning." Several of them chuckled. She slugged back some water, enjoying the level of camaraderie she and the guys had established, with the exceptions of Levi and Voodoo. Voodoo didn't like her, but as far as she could tell, he didn't like anyone, so she didn't take it personally. Levi, though, he watched her with cold assessment, as if waiting for her to screw up so bad he could legitimately refuse to let her join his team. She knew he could do it, too. The team leaders had a lot of autonomy, because a smooth-working team was so essential to their success. She'd busted her ass for 3 months to keep from giving him that excuse. Whenever she had the time to think about it logically, she should be giving him that excuse, rather than half-killing herself trying to do what they asked of her. But she couldn't think of any logical reason for her illogical actions. She had long since given up trying to explain it to herself.
"You're skinny and tan and have muscles," Jelly explained.
"Huh?" According to the scale, she'd actually gained about 10 pounds after some initial weight loss. Despite gaining weight, though, all her old clothes were too big for her now, to the point her sweatpants barely hung on her hips, and she didn't dare wear them out of the condo. But buying more meant going shopping, and she didn't have the time, energy, or interest. She'd made the effort for boots, but the boots were important. She'd ordered the cargo pants, several pairs, off the internet. Other than that, meh. She'd shop some other time, like maybe next year. She hadn't been heavy before. The description that kept coming to her was normal. Not tall, not short, not heavy, not skinny. She kind of wasn't normal now. And whenever she caught sight of herself in the mirror, she was briefly taken aback. But the truth was that beyond the teeth and hair brushing, she seldom had time to even check what she was wearing. She'd never been blessed in the boob department, but now they were almost non-existent because she'd lost so much body fat while adding muscle. She did like her arms, though, liked the definition of her triceps, and being able to pop her biceps up. In just 3 months, she was so much stronger that even though she was always tired at the end of the day, she could bound up the stairs to her condo. "Maybe I could tell them I've been working out," she mused. "That's true enough." Two or three grunts answered that.
"They won't believe that, unless they're dense," Boom said. "You don't have gym muscles, and that wouldn't explain the tan."
Well, damn. Her folks weren't dense. They hadn't successfully raised 5 kids by being either naive or gullible. 3 months before, Gina wouldn't have known the difference between gym muscles and the kind of muscles achieved by hard work. But now she did. Gym muscles were for posing, work muscles were for doing, and there was a definite difference. "Maybe they won't come," she said, feeling guilty because not wanting to see them felt awful. She loved her family and normally saw them 4 or 5 times a year. Until now. Maybe she could go home around Christmas, and by then her tan, attained despite a liberal application of sunscreen every morning, should have faded. And she'd still have to run, even on vacation, because staying in shape was a constant effort. When the guys weren't on a mission, they were either working out or going through training exercises, keeping their skills sharp. She'd be expected to do the same, so her family would see her running and assume her weight loss and muscle gain was because of that. "Do your families ever meet the other team members?" she asked, unable to contain her curiosity. To date, she hadn't met any of their family members or outside friends. Maybe they were like her and were too tired when they got home to hang out with friends.
"Sure," Trapper said. "There are cookouts, things like that. Boom and Snake both have kids, and their wives do things together. Take the kids to do stuff."
Gina wondered if they'd had any cookouts in the past 3 months, because if they had, she hadn't been invited. She didn't let herself feel hurt. Though she'd been assigned to Levi's team, she wasn't yet an official member because she hadn't completed training. If, when she was cleared and began going on missions, and they still didn't include her, then she'd let herself brood about it. But that time wasn't now. While they're in a talkative mood, she pressed on. "Do your families call you by your team nicknames?"
"In a way," Snake said. "My wife calls me by my name, but everyone else's family members call me Snake."
"Why Snake? Do you crawl fast on your stomach or something?" She'd wondered about all their nicknames, but was usually so busy trying to keep up and stay alive that she hadn't asked. In answer, he pointed to the two round scars on his forehead, rolling his blue eyes up as if he could see them. She gaped at him.
A snake bit you? Really? What kind?
A rattler. I guess the only reason I'm alive is it didn't eject any venom. I about pissed my pants, though.
You'd probably be called Snake even if you weren't on a go team, she muttered. Why do we need nicknames anyway?
She didn't like Babe at all, would never like Babe, and wouldn't like it even if she was a babe, which she wasn't.
Technically, we don't.
After their heart-to-heart talk in his truck on the first day, when he was making it plain to her she was the most expendable person on his team, Levi seldom spoke directly to her, except in command.
Hearing his voice behind her made her heart jump, and her stomach went into the jitters.
She didn't turn to look at him, though, instead holding herself as still as a rabbit being eyed by a cobra.
But we aren't military, so we don't have the protection of a military structure behind us. We're civilian, and officially unauthorized, no matter how unofficially authorized we are. It's safer for us not to have our real names broadcast over a radio.
She sighed. Unfortunately, that made sense, which meant she wasn't going to be able to jettison the babe. Calling her that was probably already too ingrained anyway. She wasn't certain any of them even remembered her real name.
What about you? She asked, moving on to Jelly. What's behind your name?
Nothing as special as a snake bite. I just like Jelly.
He gave her one of his beatific smiles that made him look about 16.
On almost everything, Snake pointed out.
I like what I like.
One by one, she got the stories behind their nicknames. Boom got his nickname by falling on the top of a vehicle and making a loud boom. Voodoo's name was because he was from Louisiana. Trapper once constructed a small trap out of sticks and caught a mouse. Crutch had broken three toes the first day of training and gimped around on crutches for a couple of weeks. And Levi was called Ace because he'd once played in the World Series of Poker. He hadn't won the big pot, but he'd walked away with a couple of hundred thousand. Gina was impressed despite herself. She didn't play poker, but she'd, out of boredom, actually watched some of the tournament the year before. So she wasn't completely ignorant. Yeah, she could see him sitting stone-faced at a poker table with a bunch of other stone faces.
You get the nickname Trophy, she said to Snake, smiling.
Getting snake bit on the forehead is kind of exotic. Everyone else's nickname is boring compared to yours. Break time's over, Levi said brusquely. Let's get back to it.
He too pointed his empty water bottle into the trash bin nearby and rose effortlessly to his feet, his powerful leg muscles and abs doing all the work.
Ha!
Gina could do that too. Now. She'd even practiced doing so at home, so no one would see her when she gracelessly collapsed to the floor. Getting up unaided required all sorts of muscles, muscles that she now had. She got to her feet, and per his instruction got back to it. She could handle this. She could handle anything he threw at her. And she was far more confident now than she'd been 3 months ago. She had this. 2 months later, she regretted even thinking those words.
Say what?
She said in horror. Surely she hadn't heard him right. She couldn't have heard him right. This was so far out of her capabilities, it might as well be in outer space.
Parachute training, Levi repeated.
Uh-uh, no.
Gina began backing away from him, as if distance would help. Her hands were up as if she could ward off the words.
I can't do that. I can't jump out of a plane. It's unnatural. Only crazy people do that.
Are you resigning?
He asked neutrally, though his cold, dark eyes were boring into her. The other guys stopped what they were doing to listen. Voodoo snickered, but she didn't expect anything else from him, the jerk. So she ignored him. In turn, they all ignored that she'd just called all of them crazy. Hey, if the tinfoil hat fit, wear it.
No. The word was thick on her tongue, but she managed to get it out. Resign was another word for quit, and though she'd stuck it out this long, 5 months now, climbing a freaking rope and running for miles and all sorts of other crap wasn't in the same category as jumping out of a plane. Her survival instinct was too strong for that, and her need for an adrenaline rush way too weak. Pain and bone-deep fatigue had become her new normal, but jumping out of a plane, she didn't know if she could. I'll try, she said, hearing the doubt in her own voice. She wanted to run screaming, because she knew she wasn't going to be able to do any suicidal leap out of a plane, but pure cussedness kept her in place. She was already beginning to shake in dread, just at the idea. God only knew what would happen when she was actually in a plane, faced with the imminent prospect of plummeting to her death. Pass out, maybe? Yeah, that would work. Maybe. She wouldn't put it past him to pick up her unconscious body and toss her out of the plane. Levi had thrown that bombshell at her while they were all kind of winding down after a long day of small arms training, running, lifting weights, then swimming in the Olympic-sized pool in the gym the Go-Teams owned, or rather that the government owned, unofficially and completely off the books. While they'd been off doing other stuff, she'd also spent a couple of hours with the drone, too, the real drone. A thing so miniaturized it was the size of a small bird, but equipped with high-definition cameras in both infrared and live-feed digital. With the equally state-of-the-art laptop and highly classified program, she could finesse Tweety, as she'd come to think of him, into a small pipe if she wanted to. She could perch him on a limb, peek from behind a rock, evade a diving hawk, which had taken her by surprise. But she had since learned raptors tended to see her little Tweety as prey. She was determined that Tweety would stay safe on her watch. Sometime along the way, she had started hanging out some with the guys after training was over for the day. Nothing social but sitting around afterward and shooting the shit. There had been some other socializing away from training, because she'd heard them talking about it, but she still hadn't been invited. And she noticed she was being excluded, even if she hadn't let herself react. She was damned if she'd let them know it bothered her. Until now, swim days had been her favorite days of training. But she didn't know if they could recover that ranking after being linked in her mind with parachute training. Still, good old swimming had a lot going for it. At least when there was swimming involved, there were also showers, both before and after the swim. And she now took a change of clothes, or two, in her car wherever she went. She didn't have to go home filthy and tired, just tired. Being clean made a big difference, and she liked swimming, in a way she would never like climbing a rope or running in weather so hot she felt as if her skin was melting.
Other than the times when they were gone on unspecified missions, almost all her awake time was spent with the guys, so it was a good thing they were on better terms now.
For better or worse, they were a team. For the most part. She was still sometimes taken aback by their guyness. She didn't know a single woman who would think it was hilarious to dump a bucket of mud over the top of a teammate's head. But Crutch and Jelly had laughed themselves sick after doing that to Trapper. Then they'd eyed her, and she'd given them a stony look and said, "Whoever dumps mud on my head will have to wash my hair and blow dry it." Considering how long her hair was now, because she hadn't had time to even get it trimmed since starting training, they had immediately disavowed any intention of getting mud on her. Uh-huh, sure. She believed that like she believed in the Tooth Fairy. But because she liked them, for the most part, and because she wanted to shove Levi's conviction that she couldn't do the job down his throat, she'd worked her ass off for the past 5 months. To become worthy of being on the team, she had pushed herself so much further than she'd ever thought she could go. She could run an easy 8 miles now, 10 if she pushed herself, which she constantly did. She could do 100 push-ups, though chin-ups still gave her problems, and her numbers went way down with them. She'd mastered the technique of hook and pinch on the rope, though they called it break and squat, and could go over the wall almost as fast as they could. She had qualified with small arms, learning how to handle a variety of weapons, even though her job description didn't call for that,
But as Levi put it, every day things happened in the field that weren't planned for in the book. She hadn't turned a hair at handling weapons. Being a country girl from South Georgia had made her comfortable with rifles and such, long before she was old enough to drive. She had changed. There was no way she could have avoided changing. She was far more sure of herself when it came to her place on Levi's team. The woman she saw in the mirror was slimmer, harder, refined down to muscle and bone. And she liked it. She liked being able to do things, liked feeling capable. She paid a price for working so hard to be here. Once upon a time, she'd had a few girlfriends with whom she'd seen movies, gone to bars and concerts, a little bit of shopping. She hadn't heard from them in months. Come to think of it, she hadn't heard from her mother in maybe a month? The threatened visit hadn't materialized, and abruptly she felt a wave of homesickness. She needed to call home tonight, because Levi was going to kill her tomorrow. He was going to throw her out of a plane. Reading her expression, Trapper bumped her shoulder with his fist and said encouragingly,
"You can do it. You know how it is when you're afraid of something? You're nervous only until you actually jump. Then after that, you're too busy doing what you need to do to think about it."
"Yeah?" She gave him a dubious look. He was assuming she wouldn't pass out, but she wasn't assuming anything. Everything else she'd done had been physical effort, pushing and pushing and not letting herself stop. But this was different. This was terrifying.
"When do I do it?" she asked,
too terrified to be embarrassed that her tone was so thin.
"Tomorrow," Levi said.
Oh, shit. Gina called her mom that night and managed to sound normal, managed to keep the conversation general and light, even though she felt as if she might vomit from nerves. She slept in fits and starts, unable to ignore the jitters in her stomach or her sense of overwhelming dread. She even hand-wrote a will, not that she had a lot to leave anyone, but still, and left it on the table, dated and signed. Then she wondered if the existence of the will would make someone think she'd suspected she was in danger, and her parents might be tormented for the rest of their lives wondering if she'd been murdered. Sighing, she wadded up the sheet of paper and tossed it in the trash, then got it out and held it over the lit eye of the gas stovetop until it caught fire. Then she spent 10 minutes cleaning up the damn ashes. Burning something wasn't a tidy way of disposing of anything. Gina's eyes were hollow with fatigue and dread when she showed up at training the next morning, but she was so wound up she could barely sit still. She hadn't eaten breakfast because she was so terrified she couldn't swallow anything solid. They were all standing in a clump, arms crossed, waiting for her. Over the months, she'd gotten used to how big they were, but now felt like the first day all over again, when she'd felt insignificant and pretty much useless compared to them. Everything she'd done, all the effort she'd made, would mean nothing if she failed now. She'd be kicked out of training, and likely she'd never see them again, because even if she was assigned another job with the agency, she wouldn't have any actual contact with the team. They had become her life, to the exclusion of almost everything and everyone else. Nevertheless, she either managed this, or they'd walk away from her and not look back, because a smoothly functioning team meant more to them than any individual. She walked up to them, her boots crunching on the gravel, the chilly morning air going all the way to the bottom of her lungs.
"All right, let's do this," she said,
trying to sound tough. She failed at pulling that off because her voice wobbled. The 7 of them looked at her woebegone face and burst out laughing, even Voodoo and Levi, who laughed about as often as a blue moon rolled around.
"What?"
she asked, stuffing her hands in her pockets and feeling self-conscious.
"You thought you'd jump out of a plane without knowing what you're doing?"
Jelly asked, snickering.
"No, I thought y'all would throw me out of a plane without knowing what I'm doing," she retorted.
"The word jump implies I'd do it willingly."
"Ground training first," Levi said. "Then we throw you out."
There were a few more snorts of laughter, none of which belonged to Gina. She tried to look as stony as he did. What's ground training? Jelly smiled a big, completely distrustful smile.
It's where we teach you how not to go splat.
7. Ground training sounds good, Gina said fervently. That meant she'd be on the ground, right? She liked being on the ground.
Step over here with me, Levi said shortly, turning and walking a good 30 feet away.
Gina hid her astonishment and trepidation and trudged in his wake, trying not to show her reluctance. Whatever induced Levi to break his normal behavior with her, meaning mostly ignoring her, had to be fairly important. He stopped and turned so he was facing the rest of the team, folding his arms across his chest. His impassive, dark gaze fastened on her as she approached, each step slower than the last because she really didn't want to have a one-on-one conversation with him, given how well the first and only one had gone. She stopped a good 5 feet away, crossed her arms in the same posture he'd taken, and waited. On the theory that she didn't want to look him in the eye, she stared instead at his nose. It was close enough to his eyes that maybe he wouldn't notice she wasn't exactly meeting his gaze. Her theory didn't work. She could feel him looking at her, so intensely it was almost like a touch that sent waves of heat washing over her skin. She shifted uneasily, wondering what the odds were that he'd give up and tell her what he wanted. Those odds had to be long, because he simply waited, silently, until she couldn't stand any longer and made eye contact. Immediately, all her nerve endings jolted, as if she'd grabbed a live wire. His dark gaze bored into her, an invisible force field battering at her, scouring her from the inside out, frying her blood in her veins. Shit. Silently, she acknowledged that she let him get to her way too much, but she didn't know what she could do about it. He was the team leader, for now the ruler of her universe. She wanted to poke at him until she broke through that iron control of his, see what she could stir up. And dear God, she had to be absolutely crazy to even think of such a thing. What? She asked, unable to keep the truculence from her tone. Damn it, she really needed to work on her attitude, she thought, annoyed at herself. Her brothers had always said her mouth would get her in big trouble one day, and she'd spent years proving them right. His eyes regarded her as remotely as if she weren't a sentient, carbon-based life form. The twitch at one corner of his mouth told her she was about an inch from overstepping her bounds. She sucked in a deep breath and braced herself for whatever he was about to unload on her. But a small, deeply buried part of her quivered with excitement that finally, finally, she was getting a reaction from him.
You just don't have any stopping sense, do you? He finally observed.
Sorry. She muttered.
And no.
Like he had to ask. She'd spent the past several months demonstrating to all of them that she and Stopping Sense had nothing more than a nodding acquaintance.
One of these days you're going to push too hard, little girl, and then you'll be on the road of no return, he said in an eerie echo of her brother's predictions. Little girl?
She swallowed her ire at the dismissive phrase. Because she'd pushed, and she knew it. Levi was the boss, and they didn't have to be in the military for his orders to count. The team leaders were the badasses, and what they said went, at least as far as each leader's own team. Axel McNamara might run the entire agency on the administration side, but he listened to his team leaders and got them everything they needed. Without them, the go teams were nothing. Levi waited, giving her a chance to spout off again. Gina pressed her lips together. She could feel words pushing against the back of her throat, but she bore down, called on her seldom-used smart-ass control, and kept them there. After giving her time to verbally hang herself, he gave a brief nod, indicating satisfaction that he'd sufficiently slapped her down, for now, and moved on to business.
Here's what's going to happen, and why. Your group is the first bunch of trainees who've had no prior jump experience, which means we aren't set up to do training the way you'd get it if you'd been in the military. We've had a short tower built and a swing landing trainer in a big Quonset hut. But a big tower would call too much attention to us. So your first jump will be an actual jump. Has to be.
An actual jump? Her stomach didn't wait. It jumped right then, up into her throat. If she needed to answer, tough, because she couldn't have managed to say a word. And what the heck was a swing landing trainer? She didn't want to swing while she was landing. For that matter, landing meant she was in the air heading down. And she didn't want to do that either.
Boom is a certified jump instructor, Levi continued. He's going to be in charge of your training, and it's going to be fast. In the military, jump school takes 3 weeks. We're going to have you jumping in less than a week. But it's individual training instead of instructors handling a whole group. So it'll work out to about the same. But don't fucking waste our time, got it? If you can't do it, walk out now.
That was what he wanted. She could see it in his eyes, hear it in the gravel of his voice, see it in his body language. He wanted her gone. Okay, damn it. She hadn't wanted to be here any more than he'd wanted her here, but she'd committed her time, a lot of energy, and a buttload of pain to doing this. She'd become provisional friends with most of the guys. Provisional because they joked around with her, teased her, sometimes deliberately making themselves targets of her ire because they liked winding her up. But they were all still aware that she hadn't made the final cut yet. She didn't want to be provisional. She wanted to do this. She wanted to meet their friends and families. She wanted to be invited to their cookouts, feel as if she belonged. She straightened her shoulders and squared up with him. Even standing as tall as she could, he was so damn big her head barely reached shoulder level on him. But she refused to show that she was intimidated, just a little, by him. I want to do it. Lie. I don't like giving up. Truth. I'll do my best. Maybe. No, she'd try her damnedest, because she didn't know any other way. So change that last one to truth. 2 out of 3 wasn't bad. The corner of his mouth did that twitching thing again. She did a quick mental check to make sure she hadn't subconsciously crossed her fingers, and he'd noticed. But no, her fingers were doing what they were supposed to do, clutching her own biceps to mimic his position. Maybe that was what was annoying him, that she was mimicking him. If so, tough.
Typical Levi, he instantly went back to being all about the work.
Today you'll learn about the different types of parachutes, how and why they're different, and you'll get into harness. It's possible to harness yourself, but mostly buddies or instructors help, because it's awkward. When you're getting in the harness, Boom will be passing straps between your legs for you to buckle in place. It's not a big deal, and he won't be copping a feel, so don't squeal and do something silly.
I don't do silly, she growled, which might not be completely true in all situations, but in this one she was serious. There were a couple of guys who might let their hands go places where they shouldn't, but Boom wasn't one of them. She trusted him, and he wouldn't do anything to make her uncomfortable.
Just letting you know what will happen. After you get through ground training, then you'll do tower training, jumping off a 34-foot tower into different ground conditions like sand or pebbles, learning how to land, how to roll.
Won't jumping from that high break my legs? Or possibly kill her? She might not live long enough to die in a failed parachute jump. She'd read once that most lethal falls were from something like 15 feet.
You'll be harnessed to a safety line. If we didn't know what we're doing, he said impatiently, none of us would survive training.
She had to give him that, so she nodded.
Then you'll do the swing landing, learning how to handle the parachute swinging from side to side. Prepare for the unexpected. In 3 days, you're jumping.
3 days? Jumping. Her. Out of a plane. Oh, God. Her lips felt numb, so she didn't try to talk, just gave another brief nod that she hoped looked curt, instead of simply being as much as she could move because she was mostly frozen stiff.
Your first jump will be tandem, Levi continued. Normally I'd hook a first-timer to a static line and kick his ass out, but he'd have already done tower jumping. Like I said, you aren't military, and that's getting you a couple of breaks here.
Lucky me. Your kindness is astounding, she thought sarcastically, but still kept her mouth shut. Now was not the time to get him pissed off, not when he could still hook her to a static line, whatever that was, and kick her ass out of the plane. A tandem jump. Maybe she could handle that. The idea still made her stomach twist, but at least if she died, she wouldn't be alone. Yeah, she could find some comfort in that.
We'll need the other guys to pull the ropes on the swing landing trainer. But until then, I'm pulling them off and having them do different stuff. They don't need to be standing around watching you. They treat you like a spectator sport anyway, and that shit needs to stop.
Spectator sport? Gina stiffened. She'd been cold, but now a flash of outrage sparked through her veins. She'd also found her tongue.
Spectator sport?
She asked carefully. She'd pushed herself so hard she'd been on the verge of collapse more days than not, and they thought of her as entertainment.
Don't get your ass on your shoulders, he advised shortly. There's no benefit, and if you blow up at them, you'll lose their support. Just suck it up and keep going.
That was what she'd been doing, and she hadn't found any fun in it. But he was right. There was no benefit to getting angry. On the final analysis, she'd rather they enjoyed having her around than be actively looking for ways to get rid of her, because that could get ugly fast. Let's get started, she said, trying to sound positive, and headed back to the other guys. Levi watched her walk away from him and allowed himself a brief moment of purely male enjoyment at the view. He missed the softer curve she'd had at the beginning of her training, but there was nothing wrong with the rounded muscles of her ass now. She'd worked hard to get those muscles, so damn straight he was going to admire them. He just had to make sure that she didn't catch him at it, and that his expression wasn't as horny as he felt. He'd hoped that with time he'd get accustomed to having her around, that maybe he'd find something about her that killed or at least muted the attraction he felt. Hadn't happened. If anything, she appealed to him more every day. How could she not? She had bone-deep grit and determination, way more than he wanted her to have. None of them, from the top down, had thought she'd make it this far. But she'd had the highest score on Max's spatial games, and they couldn't exclude her just because she was a woman. He'd waited not so patiently for the day she washed out. No one could say she hadn't tried, because she'd kept at each phase or exercise way past what they'd thought she could do. And Mac would have put her back in her old job. That was the best-case scenario. If she'd washed out, then he could have seen about having some personal time with her, find out if she kissed with the same sass and pepper she threw at them every time she opened her mouth, find out if she was half as aware of him as he was of her. He thought she was. No, he was sure she was. Levi was neither naive nor inexperienced, and he knew when a woman was attracted to him. She tried to hide it, but the color in her cheeks deepened whenever he was near. She tried like hell not to look at him, not to speak directly to him, and he knew why. She didn't want to feel the attraction any more than he did. She wanted to control it, and above all, she didn't want any of the others to know. They'd both succeeded in keeping the others in the dark, but damn it. With everything else, he felt as if they were sliding down a slope with no brakes, no way to keep them from a hard fall. Just being near her made him feel as if the air between them was arcing with hot electricity. She felt it too, and betrayed herself by getting as restless as if she had ants in her pants. She fidgeted, she twitched, she shifted back and forth. She'd start nervously feeling her long ponytail. Maybe she hadn't admitted to herself yet how aware she was of him. But he knew. He was damn good at reading people. He had to be. This damn jump instruction would likely be the death of him. Boom could handle everything on the ground, but he wasn't a certified tandem instructor, and Levi was.
A tandem jump wasn't anything to leave to someone inexperienced, no matter how many solo jumps that person had made.
Strict professionalism was needed in a tandem jump. Because hell, two people were harnessed together in spoon fashion. Given her height difference, she might need to sit on his lap to get her harnessed in the correct position. And the prospect made him feel grim, while at the same time he couldn't help anticipating it. He tried getting her positioned without doing that, but safety won out over discomfort. She had to be in the right position. If the harness was too long and she was hanging lower, instead of snugly against his chest, both steering the parachute and landing were more difficult. She was already so scared about trying. She needed a jump that went as smoothly as possible. If he was the double-crossing kind, he could scare the shit out of her and force her to quit, clearing the way for them to get up close and personal. That was dirty pool, though. He wouldn't necessarily go out of his way to help her, but neither would he sabotage her. He'd be pissed as hell if someone did him that way, so he wasn't going to do it to her. Fail or succeed, she'd do it on her own. If she succeeded, and she was damn close to finishing training ahead of everyone else, he'd have to tough it out and ignore how attracted he was to her. If she failed, then hallelujah, he was unleashed. Until then, he was between a rock and a hard place. The rock was his own ironclad rule that placed her off limits, and the hard place was in his pants. He rejoined the group and gave the guys their assignments. Jelly, predictably, groaned.
Ah, Ace, we wanted to watch her.
Levi saw her give them a quick, sharp glance, and knew she hadn't liked being regarded as their entertainment. He couldn't help kind of agreeing with the guys, because damn, there was no telling what might come out of her mouth. Still, no one wanted to be the comic relief.
We have other things to do, he replied. Boom will let us know when he needs our help.
Boom scowled at them.
Get out of here. Babe and I won't need any of you until the tower training starts.
Gina gave the parachutes her undivided attention because her life was going to depend on these nylon things. Boom had printed matter for her to refer back to, let her take notes, paused occasionally to look things up on his phone for her to watch. The harness was impressive and far more complicated than she'd expected. Not that she'd ever expected anything about parachuting, because she never thought she'd be required to do it. She studied the webbing and straps and buckles and rings. At first, everything looked like a hopeless tangle, until Boom showed her how to step into it.
Don't expect a harness to be comfortable, he said. Though they're better now than they used to be. The leg straps are a bitch. Women don't have the problems there that men do. But when the canopy opens and jerks you back, you feel it. After you're under canopy, you can adjust the straps across your boobs some. Make them more comfortable.
She didn't react to the boobs comment, because it hadn't been made salaciously. He'd been giving her information, nothing more. Besides, her boobs were barely there, so she didn't expect she'd need much strap adjusting. But the harness itself, damn. Gina saw now what Levi had meant about needing a buddy to get it strapped on. Doing it alone was possible, but she was glad she didn't have to figure it out by herself. A question gnawed at her, and finally, after looking around to make certain no one was within earshot, she said, Boom, give me a straight answer on something. He was bent over straightening the harness, preparing to guide her again through the process of putting it on.
Maybe, he said. I don't want to commit to anything without knowing what it is.
Fair enough. Do the guys make fun of me when I'm not around? He straightened abruptly, giving her a startled look.
Make fun of you? Hell no. What made you think that?
Something Levi said. She quickly amended, Ace. Because that's what everyone else called him, except she couldn't make the nickname stick in her head. She didn't have that trouble with any of the others. Some of them she didn't even know their real names. That they looked at me as their comic relief. To her dismay, Boom laughed.
Not in what you do, because you try so hard sometimes to put them to shame. It's what you say the whole time you're doing it, cussing under your breath like you think we can't hear it, yelling that we're insane morons, little things like that.
Oh. She did tend to mutter to herself, and after that first horrendous day, she might have gotten in the habit of telling them what she thought of them and the ordeals they put her through. But what was the point of saying they were syphilitic sadists if they thought it was funny?